Welcome back to The Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. We are talking about Part 8, Chapter 7. The discussion prompt pretty much sums up the chapter, I think. I don't think I missed anything with this. I said, quick, Tolstoy, it's the end of the book. Ramble about religion. Out of nowhere, and for no reason, and with no relevance, they just start going on about whether or not heaven exists or something like that. Oh, I don't know. JMama8779 said, yawn, what are we reading next? but I am Norwegian, said, ha, you guys, right now my ears are perking up and I'm thinking, finally, the meat of the book is here. Swim, said the mama fish. He said, I knew you were going to be as happy as a pig in mud. Your mission now is to keep some of us, maybe most of us, awake. And now I have meerkat images in my mind. Oh, and there's a link here to what I'm guessing is a picture of a meerkat. Oh, it's several pictures of meerkats. Beautiful. I don't know why you're thinking of meerkats, but cool. And it looks like the rest of the conversation is meerkat-based. yeah, that's it. We'll skip the meerkat conversation and let's get back into the book. Skip right ahead. Skim through the episodes, a quickie. With chapter 9, let's see if we ramble about some more religion. Because, hey, it's the end of the book. Better say some clever stuff while you still get the chance to impose your own opinion on your readers. Chapter 9 goes like this. These thoughts oppressed and tormented him, now more and now less strongly, but never left him. He read and thought, and the more he read and thought, the further he felt from his goal. Latterly in Moscow and in the country, having convinced himself that he would get no answer from the materialists, he read through and reread Plato, Spinoza, Kant, Schelling, Hegel, and Schopenhauer, those philosophers who explained life otherwise than materialistically. Their thoughts seemed to him fruitful when he read, or was himself devising refutations of other teachings, the materialistic in particular, but as soon as he began reading or himself devised solutions to life's problems, the same thing occurred every time. Following long definitions of vague words, such as spirit, will, freedom, substance, and deliberately entering the verbal trap set for him by philosophers, or by himself, he seemed to begin to understand something, but he had only to forget that artificial line of thought, and to return direct from real life and to what had appeared satisfactory, so long as he kept to the given line of thought. And suddenly the whole artificial edifice tumbled down like a house of cards, and it was evident that the edifice had been constructed of those same words, differently arranged, and without regard for something in life more important than reason. At one time, while reading Schopenhauer, he replaced the word will by the word love, and this new philosophy comforted him for a day or two, as long as he did not stand aside from it, but it too collapsed when he viewed it in relation to real life. And it turned out to be a muslin garment without warmth. His brother Koznishev advised him to read Homyakov's theological writings. Levin read the second volume of them, and in spite of its polemical, polished and witty style, which at first repelled him, he was struck by its teaching about the church. He was struck by the truth that it is not given to isolated man to attain divine truth, but that it is given to a community united by love, the church. He was pleased by the thought that it was easier to believe in an existing living church which compounds all the beliefs of men and has God at its head and therefore holy and infallible, and from it to accept belief in God, a distant, mysterious God, the creation, and so on. But afterwards, on reading the history of the church, first by a Roman Catholic and then by a Greek Orthodox writer, and finding that each essentially infallible church repudiated the other, he became disenchanted with Homyakov's teaching about the church, and that edifice fell into dust just as the philosophical structures had done. All that spring he was not himself and experienced terrible moments. Without knowing what I am and why I am here, it is impossible to live. Yet I cannot know that, and therefore I cannot live, he said to himself. In an infinity of time and in infinity of matter, in infinite space, a bubble organism separates itself, and that bubble maintains itself a while and then bursts, and that bubble is I. This was a distressing falsehood, but it was the sole and last result of centuries and the age-long labor of human thought in that direction. It was the latest belief, it was the ruling conviction, and from among all other explanations, Levin, without himself knowing when or how, had involuntarily chosen it as being at any rate the clearest of all. But it was not only false, it was the cruel mockery of some evil power, a wicked and disgusted power, and one to which it was impossible to submit. It was necessary to free oneself from that power. The means of escape were in the hands of every man. An end had to be put to that dependence on an evil power, and there was one means, death. And though he was a happy and healthy family man, Levin was several times so near to suicide that he hid a cord he had lest he should hang himself, and he feared to carry a gun lest he should shoot himself. But he did not hang or shoot himself and went on living. End of chapter. Wow, okay. Levin's got a little dark side going on. Interesting. Have your say about that one over at the subreddit. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll see ya tomozzo.